Beneath the cracked clay, a seed unfurls. Leaf, bloom, life, promise. Crossing time and space. Experience Flora, a powerful story of resilience and renewal. Presented by the Australian Ballet and Bangarra Dance Theatre. This bold new dance collaboration traces the evolution of Australian flora. Journey through our living history in this unique dance experience. Visit australianballet.com.au.
You're listening to SBS News.
You want to say a few words?
The sooner we get out, the better.
Yeah.
Staying in, I mean, I've lived through Vietnam, I've lived through the Iraq War, I've lived through Afghanistan. It's not going to end well.
That's Roger, a resident of Connecticut in the US. His comments reflect the low support for the Iran war among the American public, some of whom have cited Donald Trump's own campaign promises to avoid entangling the US in new Middle East conflicts.
It's pretty clear day after day after day by the things he said, and someone like that should never be making decisions about how to use the military.
But much of the 18-country region is now a chaotic battlefield, scarred by drone and missile strikes as the US and Israel remain locked in conflict with Iran. US President Donald Trump has asked Congress for more than $280 billion for the war, a sum that Mr. Trump says is a small price to pay for a military system he maintains is dominating Iran.
It's going to be over with pretty soon. We've obliterated their navy. We've obliterated their just about everything there is to obliterate, including leadership.
He's unlikely to get it, with the Republican-dominated Congress reportedly wary of alienating voters further ahead of the midterms. But a group of former U.S. ambassadors have told a panel at the American Academy of Diplomacy that the administration has bigger problems, arguing the war in Iran is exposing big gaps in how America goes to war that could prove risky and dangerous. John Bass is a former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan.
Plenty of folks talk about critique policy, firm retirement. Very few people will actually get under the hood in the middle of a crisis to critique that response. So the fact that we're doing this today is a reflection of how disturbed this group and many of our colleagues with similar sets of experience in war zones, in crisis operations, how disturbed we are at the breadth and the depth of the failings of the current State Department leadership.
Normally, United States foreign policy in the Middle East would be underpinned by the State Department's Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs, typically led by a veteran diplomat. The administration's most recent budget proposed a 40% cut to the Bureau, though Congress eventually enacted less dramatic reductions. Still, John Bass says that in divisions of the State Department that typically would handle the Iran response, numerous veteran diplomats with decades of collective experience have been fired, retired, or reassigned, replaced by more junior officials or political appointees.
My fellow panelists are aware of any number of instances in which former colleagues were either fired last year, included in the reduction in force effort.
It doesn't end there. The Trump administration has left the assistant secretary position in charge of Near Eastern Affairs vacant, along with key ambassadorships in the Middle East. Four of the five supervisors in the bureau have temporary titles. Perhaps most importantly, the administration also eliminated the dedicated Iran office, merging it with the Iraq office, which former U.S. ambassador to Lebanon, Elizabeth Richard, says was a mistake.
Our Iran experts, if they were still employed, would have been saying, okay, this is how Iran has always reacted in the past. Iran has never beaten anybody in a state-on-state war. Asymmetric is how they, where's their biggest impact in Lebanon? Asymmetric through Hezbollah. Well, the Houthis all about asymmetric. And so senior diplomats would have thought this through and thought, what are the asymmetric ways they can come in and hurt us?
The United Nations has been repeatedly calling for a diplomatic solution to the crisis in the Middle East. UN Secretary-General Deputy Spokesman Farhan Haq says The conflict is getting completely out of control.
And the Secretary General said to Iran, stop attacking your neighbors. They were never parties to the conflict. He added that the prolonged closure of the Strait of Hormuz causes enormous pain in so many people around the world that have nothing to do with this conflict. Mr. Guterres said that it's time for the force of law to prevail over the law of force and for diplomacy to prevail over war.
The ambassadors argue that the lack of expertise and available staff for planning has impacted the ability of the U.S. to negotiate a peace agreement. Jeffrey Feltman is another former U.S. ambassador to Lebanon.
Safety of Americans is the first priority of everything we're talking about here. But if you're also trying diplomacy, isn't this a nice pressure point to say, yeah, you know, we're also looking at letting people leave our embassies. We're also raising the levels of the travel advisors. And that adds diplomatic pressure to the negotiations that you say you want to succeed.
Experience the world premiere of Flora, a powerful story of resilience and renewal, presented by the Australian Ballet and Bangarra Dance Theatre. This bold new dance collaboration takes you on a journey through the evolution of Australian flora, bringing together artists drawn from two of Australia's leading dance companies. Flora promises to be unmissable. Journey through our living history in this unique dance experience. Visit australianballet.com.au.
Our Medicine returns for a powerful new season.
Our role is being there on someone's worst day.
It can also be a really tough place to work.
Step onto the front line with First Nations medical practitioners.
You had a fall, did you?
With unprecedented access.
You can't control what's going to happen next.
The series reveals how modern medicine and cultural knowledge work together to deliver better care.
That's a pretty beautiful thing to be part of.
Our Medicine. Stream now on SBS On Demand.
Meanwhile, US President Donald Trump and his aides have been ratcheting up the pressure on journalists to cover the war in the Middle East the way the administration wants. Trump has complained about war coverage in both specific and general ways. In a social media post, he said news reports exaggerated the damage to planes that were attacked by Iran at an airport in Saudi Arabia, while he has also accused media outlets of falling for AI-generated false reports created by Iran. The government's top media regulator has warned that broadcasters risk losing their licenses if they don't stay away from so-called fake news. Mr. Trump and his defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, have also questioned the patriotism and credibility of news outlets because of their reporting.
Some in this crew, in the press, just can't stop. Allow me to make a few suggestions. People look up at the TV and they see banners, they see headlines. I used to be in that business, and I know that everything is written intentionally.
All presidential administrations tangle with the press. It's considered the natural byproduct of journalists' role in a democratic society. But author of The Presidents versus the Press book, Harold Holzer, says these incidents speak to a hostility towards the very idea of being questioned.
Every president has demanded and desired that the press be praise him and not criticize him. This is not a new phenomenon. What's new is the personal way that President Trump does it. He doesn't argue that it's a national security issue, even that it's a patriotic issue. He argues that women shouldn't question him. He calls them names. He tells them to shut up. That level of personal intimidation is totally without precedent and maybe the ugliest thing about this current crackdown is that he's acting like a despotic, authoritarian military leader who tolerates no pushback.
Mr. Trump does not agree with such assessments. When pressed in the Oval Office why he did not coordinate or inform allies, such as Japan, that he was planning on striking Iran in the first place, for example, he said his approach was the right call.
One thing, you don't want to signal too much, you know. When we go in, we went in very hard, and we didn't tell anybody about it because we wanted surprise. Who knows better about surprise than Japan? Okay? Why didn't you tell me about Pearl Harbor? Okay?
Deborah Grok, SBS News.
three iconic Australians experience firsthand what it takes to save a life.
Oh my gosh.
Terrifying.
I have no idea what I'm about to do.
The Hospital in the Deep End. Stream free on SBS On Demand.